What's up, everyone? It's Luke Wilson here. I'm excited. You know, I'm talking to my guy KJ, and we're going to get into this a little bit, but I'm taking over the KJ All Day pod. A couple things here. You know, I got to put my own little flair on this thing. We might be rocking a little Motley Crue as an intro song soon, but let's get the elephant out of the room first. Let's talk about my guy KJ. And first and foremost, I want to say, out of all my time in Seattle, KJ was one of the greatest leaders I've ever been around and one of our best players by far. I mean, this guy is a Seattle legend. He's been great in the community. He is a great dude. You know, you hear about guys that are like, maybe they're one way in the field, different with somebody else. That's not KJ. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. He is exactly who you guys think he is, a phenomenal dude. I love the guy. That being said, fuck the Niners. You heard it here first. It's ridiculous, man. I'm happy for my guy, KJ, but I can't stand him. Not KJ, the 49ers. I mean, it hurts my heart just thinking about my guy, the heart and soul of our Seahawks team, rocking that ugly logo on a franchise that hasn't won shit since 1995. But I digress, because there are a couple Seahawk ties there. Their special teams coach, Brian Snyder, was with us for a long, long time. When we won the Super Bowl, he was the guy. Nick Sorensen, also big Seahawks guy, was a huge part of a lot of those magical years. So joking aside, I hate the Niners. I have no interest in coaching. But that being said, I'm excited for KJ. It does hurt my heart a little bit. So let's move on now. Co-host, that's coming. Again, everything here is coming a little quick right now. I'm sure some of you got a lot of questions, and we'll get to that. We'll have a Q&A at the end, but it's not going to be in here in this room, you know, from here on out. This is kind of a one-time thing. Let's talk about enough nonsense. Let's talk about the offseason right now. I'm going to be completely transparent here. I love what Seattle has done this offseason outside of moving on from Pete Carroll. You will not find a bigger guy, Pete Carroll fan, than me. For those of you who watched the pod, you know, let's call it 6-7 months ago on with KJ, you guys heard me sing Pete Carroll's, you know, praises, and I love the dude. But he's obviously not here no more. Let's talk about the current situation of the Seahawks. To me, everybody wants to talk about the new head coach, and that's great, as they should. You know, Mike McDonald, he's obviously the hot ticket right now. But I'm hoping, and I think that I'm not alone in this camp, that this becomes more of an offensive-based team. And what I mean by that is, if you look at this roster, okay, and I got to say a few things that maybe some fans don't want to hear, but this is not the Legion of Boom. Like, we need to move on as a Seahawks fan base and realize that, like, the Legion of Boom is a generational defense. You can't just create, oh, this guy's really good, we're going to come back and make the Legion of Boom. It does not happen. Okay. And I'm not saying that these young kids aren't great. You know, Witherspoon, Woolen, I think they're phenomenal players. But it's not, you need more than just one guy, and you need cohesiveness. When I was playing tight end against the Legion of Boom, let's just start with the secondary. Cam, Earl, Sherm, Browner, was a Walter Thurman, you know, was a Deshaun Shedd. These guys, they worked so well together, and especially the big three were all just perennial stars. And then you sit there and you had Bobby and KJ, and we haven't even gotten to our D line. So my point is, even if we go get a bunch of stars, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have a Legion of Boom style defense. So that brings me back to my other point. I said, hey, this should become a little more offensively focused team. And to me, the biggest hire is Grubb. You know, you look at this OC, can he be the guy to get this offense from good to great? Because I look at this, and I played with a lot of these guys, and I'm telling you, these guys are incredible. They have so much depth. It's unbelievable. And it starts with quarterback Geno Smith. I've seen Geno. I've been a teammate of Geno. The guy has all the physical tools. He's beloved in the locker room. He works his bag off. There's nothing more you want in a quarterback than Geno Smith can or can't do. This guy's got it all. Now you look at the wide receiver room. DK, stud. Tyler Lockett, still got it, stud. I don't know the guy, never played with him, but JSN, especially late in the year, certainly looked like a stud to me. The next guy we'll talk about is a tight end, Noah Fant. And you know I got to go on a little bit of a rant here about my tight end situation. And we'll get into this. Again, I'm just warming up here, but we have never been an offense that utilizes the tight end properly. Okay. And since I've been here, you look at Zach Miller, you know, could he have gotten more balls? For sure. After that, my fucking boy, Jimmy. I mean, the guy was the best tight end in the NFL, and we struggled to consistently get him the ball. And then it was Gerald Everett. I think Ed Dixon in there. Greg Olsen. Now, he was towards the later half of his career. But my point is, Noah Fant, if you watch this guy on film, stud. Like, I think we got a huge deal. Like, basically, playing for Seattle devalued him. And we got a steal with the amount of money we paid this guy. I'm very sad to see my boy Disley and Parkson go, but my point is, if you're a Seahawk fan right now and you're rolling in with, like I said, Noah Fant, who's as talented as anyone and has developed as a blocker, DK, Tyler Lockett, JSN, Geno Smith, and at running back, you've got Walker in the rookie last year, looked like a stud, Charbonnet. This team is loaded, loaded. And I think that the offensive line is better than what people give them credit for. They need to stay healthy. They need to stay healthy. So as, I know there's a lot of people thinking like, hey, we haven't made a big splash. We haven't really, like, you know, gotten a great big free agent name, so to speak. Here's a question. Outside of Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett, which was over a decade ago, what big name free agent has really worked out here? That's not John Snyder's style, and nor should it be. They, like I just said, they've got pieces. This team, to me, is not in a rebuilding year. This team is ready to win right now. And I'm not just saying that. I think it's going to be very tough. Obviously, new head coach. They're in a very tough division. The Rams will be good. The Niners, you know, will be good, as much as it pains me to say that. I think the Cardinals will not be good, just being completely honest. But you sit here and you look at that offense. If Grubb can get this thing really firing, and then on defense, yeah, there's a couple issues, and I understand that. But Mike McDonald's supposed to be a defensive guru. I mean, with that offense, theoretically, you shouldn't need the number one defense in the NFL. You need to sit here, get stops, and if you have to, hold in the field goals and create some turnovers. You know, now, let's talk about the defense a little bit. I kind of like what they did at linebacker. Like, clearly with Baker and I believe Dodson, they're both on one-year deals. They're both veteran guys that are hungry to prove it. So you got a couple veteran guys in there that can get the defense right. The next thing I'll say is that I think personally, and we're going to get into this. I got a couple interviews lined up. I don't know these guys. I've never played with Jerome Baker. I don't know Dodson. But one of the things Seattle has lacked in my last couple years, and I think, you know, in the last few years that I was not playing, was real veteran leaders. And what I mean by that is, if I look at the team that won the Super Bowl, okay, and it's very easy to sit here and be like, hey, why did that team win the Super Bowl? Well, offensively, you know, you think of Marshawn, you think of a young Russ. Defensively, we already talked about the Legion of Boom. Okay, but to me, as a guy in that locker room, the kind of glue that made everything go offensively, I think of Max Unger. I think of Breno Giacomini, you know, two veteran offensive linemen that just played the game the right way. Defensively, Mebane, Red Bryant, guys KJ's had on this podcast. You know, those guys police the locker room. And from the things I've kind of heard through the grapevine is that when you lose those type of guys, you know, and you kind of have a ship that's run loose to begin with, that's kind of the Seattle vibe or how it was. If the locker room isn't self-policed, it spills on to game day play. You get a lot of issues, and you lose games you shouldn't. If you would have told me last season, and I remember watching this, that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to come into our building late in the year against a Pete Carroll team and really dominate that game, you know, and win with our playoff hopes on the line, I would have told you you were insane. No way did I think that would ever happen. I would ever even see it. So, again, I think that when I look at situations like that, you know, to me it screams player leadership. And I hope that these guys that they're bringing in, although they're not big stars, can kind of bring a little bit of veteran leadership, a little toughness, a little grit, and get these boys back on the same page. So, yeah, that's kind of my off-season updates right now. I know there's going to be some questions, but we're probably going to move on. again, I think another thing we need to talk about is just Geno Smith. And I can't wrap my head around these people that are like, man, you know, we got to move on from Geno, or Geno's not cutting it, or whatever. What is it that you think you're going to get in like a young quarterback that Geno can't already do? The guy can fling the ball with the best of them. You know, he works hard. He studies the game. He's a lot more mobile than people give him credit for. And the dudes play hard for him. I'm telling you, I truly believe that Geno Smith can take this team and win 12, 13 games. Like, that's me. I've played with Geno. I've had a locker, three lockers down from the guy. I think he's a stud. I think the world of the guy. I also love the Sam Howell pickup. Sam Howell is out here. You watched the Commanders last year. Kid's grinding. I mean, the kid's grinding, okay? Not the best situation. He's living in Washington, D.C., for Christ's sake. I can't imagine how shitty that is, okay? They're not really loaded. The team stinks, and this kid's going out there every single Sunday and just battling and battling and battling and putting up some good numbers. So there's another guy, you know, as a number two dude, you know, when Geno's done or he has to, you know, get paid $65 million one day because he's the man. Now all of a sudden we've kind of groomed Sam Howell, who's clearly capable of putting up some big numbers in this league. So again, kind of back to the same point, I'm a big fan of what we got going on in the QB room right now, and I think that Grubb is a key part of this entire team this year, because to me, the offense is ready to just explode now, and that's that. And then a couple other big chats, I would say, that have kind of happened this year is the Jamal Adams situation. You know, I played with Jamal. I really like the guy. I think he's really liked in the locker room. I know they're talking about potentially bringing him back. You know, Jamal's gotten very unlucky with injuries. You know, sometimes injuries happen, this thing, and it's a freak ordeal, and it's a tough situation because, you know, this guy wants to play. It's not like he wants to be hurt. But also, when you miss that much time, it just takes a toll on you mentally. Like, you can't really underestimate how much it just wears on you when you're just 6 a.m. every day rehabbing these really gruesome injuries. So I tip my cap to Jamal. I hope he's back with Seattle. I think that Mike McDonald can really use him wisely, you know, kind of have him in the box, blitzing a lot, really being disruptive like he was when he was on the Jets. And I think that's a good fit for him. But is the money right? You know, is Jamal happy with the management? There's a lot of things that probably play into this off the field. And also, is Jamal mentally, you know, ready to go back and rumble again? He's had a tough time. He's had a, you know, great career, but he's had a tough time with injuries. And it's been a tough battle for him in the media as well. So does he want to be back here? Does he want a fresh start? Again, I think if you're a true Seahawk fan, you got to respect whatever Jamal Adams decides. And then last thing I'll say, and then maybe we'll get to some questions on this thing. That's kind of more my vibe anyways, would be, you know, draft day and what we're thinking. I think that, you know, when you look at the Seahawks, you look at John Snyder, and you kind of read in between, like, I'm halfway decent at reading in between lines that Pete Carroll says in his interviews. And I watched his, you know, exit interview, and he said, John, this is your thing now. Like, John's calling the shots. And in the past, it was probably a combination of the two. Maybe Pete has the final say on some things. I got a feeling we're probably in for John trading a draft pick. You know, as we all know, he loves trading the first rounder, getting a bunch of picks and developing them. One of the things that's kind of cool about this new staff, again, don't know him, but Grubb is a college guy. You know, McDonald, yes, he's coming from the Ravens, but before that, he was a Michigan guy. So theoretically speaking, these guys should be able to really kind of focus on developing players, meaning like, hey, yeah, they're rookies, but we got to treat them like they're freshmen. How do we get these guys going so they learn our system? They're young. Again, Grubb's obviously just removed from UW. Like, he gets kind of that age range. So to me, it would not surprise me if you're sitting there and John's like, yo, I'm going to try and trade this first round pick, draft a slew of youngsters, and really get them going with these guys who know how to connect with this age group. That would be my guess. Again, if I'm looking at potential draft. I think maybe we pick up an early O lineman at some point, and then I think we're pretty heavy on defense. I think they start, like I said, I like the pieces we have on offense. I think defensively they start building through the draft and guys that can really play McDonald's system. And that being said, let's get to some questions here. I know there's a bunch of you in here. We're going to go right to some questions right off the bat. What do we got here first? Okay, we got a couple guys saying best of luck this year. You know, best of luck to KJ. I will tell him that. And we, after all, we want to beat his team's ass. And I just to kind of give you guys like where my head goes with the Niners, and it's childish, but like when I first got in here, it was still the Harbaugh days. And I just remember like the first year for me sitting there, and it was like, man, there was all these like Pete Carroll versus Harbaugh, USC, Stanford days. And like, I love Pete. I just said that. That's my guy. Like, you will not hear me talk shit about Pete Carroll ever. So you kind of take on like he's, you know, you love your head coach. You take on his wars. I don't even know if he likes Harbaugh or not. But at the time, the media was like, these guys got a history. So I was like, fuck them then. You know, fuck the Niners. And then all of a sudden, it was like you heard things about Sherm and Doug's time at Stanford with Harbaugh. And there's all these rumors circulating about like Harbaugh maybe tried to bury these guys in the draft or didn't give them glaring reviews. There's a couple other stories. You know, my tight end coach, Pat McPherson, who's now in Carolina with Dave Canales, his dad is actually just got nominated for a Pro Football Hall of Fame Excellence Award with the Niners. But they weren't very happy that his son was coaching the Seahawks, allegedly. So there were some issues with Bill McPherson there. And the guy was like 80 years old. It's like, what is he going to do? Is he spying for us? It's ridiculous. So it's just like all of this bad blood. And I know that Harbaugh's clearly not there. He's coaching in L.A. now. But I just can't stand him. I can't stand him. I don't like the look of their uniforms. It disgusts me. Some of you know this, but I work as a football analyst up in Canada on TSN. I was at the Super Bowl this year, and when I got my shot, I had the mic in my hand. I talked to SportsCenter on JonSC, it's called up there, Jon, right? And I said to him, I'm not going to lie, it tickled my heart when the Niners blew another one. I mean, I love it. I might be the biggest Kansas City fan in the world after they smacked the Niners twice in the Super Bowl. So yes, best of luck to KJ, but I hope eventually he gets out of there and goes to a different team. All right, we'll go to the next question here. Luke brought his own Wi-Fi. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what's going on or what that means. Money Mike, can you clarify that? Because of our setup. I don't know. I mean, but we're dialed in here. Again, we're making it work. This is going to sound terrible, but I'm got into Seattle today, and I'm leaving tomorrow to go do a cycling race. Yes, I'm a loser who cycles now, but it is enjoyable. You know, we got to do what we got to do when we're done. All right, what do we got next here? We are so back. Axel, I agree with that. And again, we'll clean this thing up a little bit. We'll get it going where eventually we'll have a host. We'll talk a little more Seahawk ball. Couple people I'd like to interview. I'd like to talk to my guy, Will Disley, but to be honest with you, I shot Will a text probably a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and he ghosted me. So if you guys don't mind sending Will a DM, I'm not sure why I deserve to be ghosted. I'm like big bro to this guy, and he can't hit me back. The next guy I'd like to get on here, which I'm not sure he'll do it, but I think having a Jimmy Graham interview would be the most fascinating thing on planet Earth. He's obviously a close friend of mine. Jimmy had a very interesting time in Seattle, as many of you know. And also, he's the world's most, he's the Dos Equis man. I'm sure some of you know, but he's planning in 2025 to row the Arctic Circle. Like, we're going to get this guy on here. He's going to explain it. I know it's a very cool fundraiser he's doing as well. A lot of charities attached to it. But it's one of the most like gruesome physical challenges I think I've ever heard of. But I got a feeling Jimmy's going to smack it. So Axel, I agree. We're back. Again, those are kind of some pipeline interviews coming up. And I got a couple of heaters I think that'll really get everybody going as well. But we'll keep them hush-hush for now. Any chance G ends up coming back? That's a great question, Richard. I got to call G up, and we got to talk about it. I know 710 he's got some commitments there. I'm kind of in and out of town. So, again, this is a bit of a last-minute ordeal. I didn't know KJ was trying to get the Niners gig. So just kind of things fell into the stars aligned, and we're going to get everything sorted here soon. Sarah, so happy you're here. Any good off-season stories for us? That's a great question. For me personally, this off-season, I'd like to say that, you know, Sarah, I'm kind of sweating when you ask me that, because in the past, I, you know, feel like I was kind of a wild man in the off-season, not even from a partying standpoint, just from like a fun standpoint. But now I've kind of mellowed out this year a little bit. I'm growing up a little bit. I'm 34 years old. I still feel like I'm 23, if you know what I'm saying. I still think like I'm 23, but at some point all my buddies are married with kids. I got to, you know, reality's got to set in that I'm no longer a 23-year-old playing in the NFL. But I will say, Sarah, I've got quite a few stories from my playing days that I think will eventually come to light on this podcast. Releasing Ballor, best offseason move by the Hawks. Okay, so my guy Mark here knows me and Nick Ballor are pretty close. He might be the funniest guy. I know some of you have seen Between Two Ballors. He might be the funniest guy I've ever played with by far. So, and he is a good friend of mine. But I would have to agree. I mean, the guy's an absolute pylon. What is he good for? He does nothing. I'm just joking. He's a man out there. I got a feeling though, Ballor's going to end up, you know, maybe in the Commanders or DQ, somewhere like that. If he's smart, he'll probably wait till the last week of training camp, because the guy in, I think year 14 he's in, probably does not need to go through training camp. But I do think the Seahawks will miss Nick in the locker room, because he's a pretty epic locker room figure, and he's a great special teams guy. Top two needs from the draft. Dustin Langley, great question. Okay, so I mentioned this earlier. If they're not going to trade the first-round pick and there's a guy that they think they can plug and play on the offensive line right away, that would be my first one. Again, I'm not in the coaching staff. I didn't call anybody, okay, on the coaching staff. But to me, I look at this team and I think the best situation they have is they've got a defensive guru in their head coach. But offensively, this team is stacked. And they need to be a top five offense in the NFL. And I think that should be the goal, if not even better. So if O-line is, you know, the one position that they need to tighten up, boom, I'd say get an O-lineman that can play now. If not, to me, they start building through the draft. I mentioned beginning this thing, like, we're not going to, shouldn't say never, but it's going to be very, very tough to ever see a defense operate like the Legion of Boom did. That's not saying that there can't be a great Seahawk defense. So, you know, you think of that team. Sherm was drafted. Cam was drafted. KJ was drafted here. Bobby Wagner was drafted here. Like, yes, there are some free agents added. I mentioned earlier, Mike Bennett, Cliff Averill. But a lot of that core, Earl was also a draft pick here. You know, they need to kind of, you've got something with Witherspoon, Woolen, obviously. These guys are after my time. But try and find, you know, a Bobby Wagner of the future, something like that. I think that if there's an O-lineman there you think can play right away, you take that. If not, you really load up on defensive guys. Any record with the Seahawks the fans have wrong, like a rumor or something we thought was one way but never really like to set right? Jonathan Smith, I like that. Mike, he's a good, Money Mike, man, he's on it. There's quite a few things. You know, one of the guys, this will be interesting, but one of the guys I think got a bit of an unfair characterization in the media was Daryl Bevel. Daryl Bevel, in my opinion, has been the most successful offensive coordinator that Seattle has had, you know, in the last, let's call it 10, 15 years. And that's not a shot at other guys, but I felt like Bev really took a lot of the blame for a lot of, you know, hey, the offense should be better. The offense should be this. The offense should be that. And again, I'm not in the front office. I was not a coach. I was obviously a player at that time. But if you talk to any D coordinators, anybody, you know, you're with guys training in the offseason, a lot of them would say they had a very, very hard time prepping for our offense. And one of the things I appreciate about Bev was that, to me, he put us in a lot of times in really great spots. He was incredible at mirroring up formations. And what I mean by that is, hey, we come out here and we're in a two tight end set, you know, my Zach Miller and myself, and we run wide zone. And then we run weak zone, but we're in the same formation. And we run wide zone again. And all of a sudden it's the third quarter, and it's like, hey, we're going to run this play action from this exact, you know, same motion, same setup, except boom, you're going to be here, 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 and this thing should, you know, break wide open. And that was Bev. Like, I thought he was a mastermind at doing that. It wasn't always the most sexy, you know, play calling of all time, but he understood that we had a generational defense. He understood we had Marshawn, and he understood how to win games. And I know a lot of you saw it. We won a lot of damn games, you know, and we would talk about this. Even Tom Cable would come in and say, hey, this bad boy might be close, but in the fourth quarter, you'll feel this, like, this team quit. And it was funny. When I think of that, I actually think of the divisional game my rookie year against the New Orleans Saints. So, and this might be a little weird, you know, as a fan hearing this, but there's certain times as a player, you're just controlling the game. So I remember thinking this. We obviously had the one seed. We get Drew Brees and the Saints at home. And this was the year we won the Super Bowl. And I remember Cabes came in. He would do the run install. And he's like, hey, we're going to run power in the third or fourth quarter. And we never were a power run team. We were always a zone running team. And he'd always say, like, yo, we got to keep chipping away. Like, those three-yard gains will become four in the second quarter. We'll become fives and six in the third. And then we'll break one in the fourth, and this game will be over. Like, they just can't handle Marshawn. They can't handle our offensive line beating down on them like this. And sure as shit, Marshawn wanted it. We called power late in that game. And you would have, I mean, being out there, the linebackers were wildly confused because they hadn't seen it. We hadn't really ran it. And you could just feel like, boom, we broke it for a TD. And even after that, it was just like, man, we're sick of these guys. Like, they just never stop coming after you. So to me, if there's one thing I like to set right, I think Bev was actually quite liked by a lot of offensive guys. I think he was a lot smarter than what people gave him credit for. And you can kind of see that since his departure from Seattle. He's had a lot of success in this league still. Has Coach McDonald invited / talked to any of the previous players yet? Not to my knowledge. I'm sure he has. And to be honest with you, he's probably super busy right now. What I mean by that is, guy gets hired. It was obviously a pretty, like, there are different coaches coming in. Boom. And right away, it's like, we got to get ready for the combine. We got to get ready for free agency. We got to get ready for the draft. And now, also, because he's a new head coach, they get that week early. So new head coaches, you can report a week early. You can have, I believe it's one extra mini camp. So probably my guess is McDonald will finally not slow down, but at least have time to catch his breath after the second mandatory mini camp. It would not surprise me if, you know, one day he's on this podcast. That's all I'm going to say. It wouldn't surprise me. I don't know the guy, but I got a feeling that I could maybe pull some strings and get him on here one time. Techno Thursdays, thoughts on the tight end opposite of Fant? You know, that's a good question because we've lost, you know, we lost Disley, lost Parkinson. So right now, I'm not exactly sure if they're going to go into the draft, what their plan is. But the nice thing is, I think because they didn't use Fant to throw the football, the guy bought into blocking. Like, when he is big, he's athletic. I can't say enough about this dude. Watching him last year, I know he didn't have the stats that everybody wanted him to have, but that's not on him. Excuse me. So I think that Fant is really going to have a huge year, especially in this offense. And I think that whoever that second tight end is going to be, I'm hoping is more of a 270-pound, you know, stockier run game kind of meat grinder tight end, if you know what I'm saying. Yes, Jose, Doug Baldwin, most underrated wide receiver. He was lethal. Jose, I'm telling you, this fucking guy, Doug, he was incredible, man. And it kind of hurts my heart because, in my opinion, like, there was a time where he was the best receiver in the NFL. Like, he was doing shit on film that was just dumb. And I mean dumb and like, like an incredible way. You'd be like, my God, like this is stuff you would expect like a really good player against like a bum in high school to do, not against NFL DBs. And Doug was very talented. He obviously had great hands. He could run great routes, but he also was wildly cerebral out there. And I don't want to speak for Doug. That's my guy. But when they say angry Doug, I think that part of, again, this is my own opinion, saying coming from Doug, but part of his frustrations was that he was so great at wide receiver, and sometimes we weren't able to showcase that. And, you know, part of it is luck of the draw. You know, we got Marshawn. We got a great defense. Like, we didn't really need to be a couple of those years throwing the ball 40 times. And it probably annoyed him because I agree. You know, Doug was that good. And, like, in the games he was that good, and in practice he was that good as well. He was incredible. Which players will have a breakout year in 2024? Okay, so to me, I think number one's probably going to be Geno. I'd say he already had a breakout year a couple years ago, but I think Geno ends up being one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL this year. Statistically, I think he's right in there. I think that, you know, he's going to be ripping. That's all I can say. Like, it would not surprise me if he's up there in the all-pro conversation. I think Geno Smith is really going to thrive in this new offense, and I think that they're going to basically give him the keys of the throne and say, you're the guy, here are the keys, get this thing done, and that'd be number one for me. Number two, I'm going to go actually with Noah Fant. I know I keep singing this guy's praises, but I watched him a ton last year, and hopefully Grubb can kind of be the first guy in the last decade that's like, yo, we did throw the ball and utilize the tight ends. Clearly, I've got a, not a gripe, but a bit of a vendetta against that. But I think about my guy, Jimmy, you know, and he was a special player too. And I don't think we really utilized him to his ability. How much influence, if any, did Pete Carroll have on the offense game planning philosophy? Okay, a known enemy. Okay, so again, on this podcast, one of the things I hope you guys will learn from me is I'm just going to be like authentic, be completely honest. My honest answer is I don't know, because we wouldn't really be in these meetings. Like when they're like, Pete said to Bev or Pete said to Shoddy, he wants to run it. I'd be like, first off, how does the media know about this? But like also we wouldn't know as players. Like we get the game plan. We don't get the private conversations that allegedly did or didn't happen between Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer or Shane Waldron. So I don't officially know the answer to that. To me, I would have, like, I know that was part of the narrative. I have a hard time believing that Pete was really micromanaging anyone. So that was why, again, when those rumors came out, I just really thought that that was a strange thing, because knowing Pete, you know, he really was about guys like being creative and figuring things out. I mean, obviously he liked to run the football, but the idea that he's like governing our offense, I don't think was, again, just an opinion, but I do not think was occurring. Congratulations, Luke. You are fantastic. Watch you with Jay every week. Got a Canadian. Glad to see a platform where I can see your input. I appreciate that, Mackenzie. It's been a fun ride, and who knows? Maybe we'll have Jay Onright on this podcast, potentially hosting. I don't know. You never know. But that'd be kind of a fun situation. Ryan, thank you very much, man. I appreciate it. I know it's a little different right now with the whole monologue, but again, we'll have a couple interviews upcoming here very soon. Thank you for that. Okay, Dustin Langley, how far can I sling a football in best bar in Windsor? Okay, that's impressive. My guy's got my hometown here. I'll start with how far I can sling a football, maybe 7 total yards. Fortunately, I came out of the game pretty unscathed, minus my right shoulder. Absolutely janky. I mean, it's kind of trash, to be completely honest. So I can't throw worth a damn. It's quite embarrassing. I can barely lift it over my head. Best bar in Windsor, I got to go with Loose Goose, man. Here's a fun one for you, and I don't know if, you know, someone earlier asked about fun stories, but back in the day, I'm not saying Loose Goose let me do this. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. We used to do these things called, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of these, maybe just jump in the chat, but called pipe bombs, where we would take a Red Bull at Loose Goose in the off season, especially after winning the Super Bowl, and basically you would pop the bottom of it, dump about a third of it out, fill it up with vodka, and then shotgun the Red Bull, you'd have an out-of-body experience at about 6 in the morning. And it wasn't a good out-of-body experience. But ever since they let me get away with that, I got to give the nod to Loose Goose. Luke, is the GM, if Brock Bowers tight end is there at number 16 or dressing? Okay, Luke, if I'm the GM, I see what you're saying, Ramon. To me, I'm all over this guy's nuts right now, and I don't even know him, but I like Fant. I think he's a great player. I'm not saying Brock Bowers isn't. I'm not saying that. But if you're at 16 and there's an offensive lineman that I'm talking a plug-and-play offensive lineman, meaning like we think this guy can come in here and not just play this year but play well, I'm going offensive line over tight end because I really think Fant is that good. And just like that, I mean, we got a couple more questions and then I'll get out of everybody's hair. I mean, also, if you guys want to send some things in, you know, but potential hosts, please let Disley know. I'll see if anyone's got to him already. Nope. Please let Will Disley know that I'm very mad at him, that he has not responded to my texts. You know, I got a feeling a couple guys I'd like to have eventually on this podcast. Like I said, Jimmy would probably be up there. Disley would be. I'd like to talk to the godfather of the Seahawks. I'll have to call him and see. This guy is the greatest person in your organization. I'd also love to hear from John Snyder. You know, I love John. I think the world of the guy and his family, what they've done the community here. So maybe that'd be a goal for the pod. Let's get John on here, chopping it up. And that's kind of all I got right now, Mike. If we got any more questions, someone said we are probably going to tinker with the name of the show. I think we might tinker a little bit with also the intro music. Oh, we got no more questions. Let's see. I see that. Love John Snyder. We got a couple Justin Britt people in here. We'll see. Looks like we got another question here, Mike. What do we got? Here we go. Which would you fight? Kevin, I'm glad you asked that. This kind of brings me back, and again, to a fun locker room story that ended up with me calling the Seattle Zoo. I can't remember what year this was, but we got in this whole, ordeal. We got in this whole ordeal, let's call it. And please chime in the chat if you guys think this is obviously means no offense to anybody. If there's like any huge animal lovers out there, this wasn't a real situation. It's very hypothetical. But 1 year we got in this like massive 2-week debate. Okay. How many people, and you can pick the people, would it take to kill a silverback gorilla? No weapons. And you're in a flat field. Okay, that was the thing. And there's not like trees, you know, can't like take, like people are like, if you're at a bar, you can take a bottle. No weapons. He's got no weapons. And it got to the point where like we're drafting people on our team and what's the number? Is it infinity? Can you not do it? You know, and I decided, you know, I was going to call the zoo to get to the bottom of it because it got intense. So I called the Seattle Zoo. Poor lady there was probably like, what is going on? I had her on speaker. Well, in fairness to her, she kind of did what we had already done. She starts reading back stats about silverbacks to try and help us out. I'm like, lady, this has been a 2-year or 2-week debate. You don't think I've gone on Google and known how many tons a silverback gorilla can deadlift? Like, this is serious shit. So we didn't really get to the bottom of it. But to answer your question, would you rather fight a one horse-sized duck or 10 duck-sized horses? I would probably fight the 10 duck-sized horses because I could probably kick, like physically kick them or even run around. And any good RW stories? I mean, there's so many. Russ made so many plays. Again, it's on the spot. It's kind of hard to it's hard to think of, but one of my favorite moments was my rookie year. And if you get bored, I'm sure you can find this on YouTube. We were in Houston early in the year, and we didn't really play well offensively. That was a game Sherm picked off, I believe it was Matt Schaub, and lost a shoe for pick six. And we needed a first down. It was either late in the game to tie it or maybe in overtime. And I want to say it was fourth down. And Russ was in the huddle. It broke down, and I kid you not, man, like just being in there, he was like frothing at the mouth. It was kind of, for a young kid like me, it was my third or fourth game in the NFL, seeing that level of like competitiveness and what it meant to him, kind of has always been ingrained in me. So that was a moment I always think about when I think about Russ. Thanks for that question, by the way. Do you have any funny Marshawn Lynch story? Obviously, he was one of the best teammates you could have ever had. He just seems like a fun man. Jonathan, I could not agree with you more. I think all of us have 10 million funny Marshawn Lynch stories. You know, not all of them are wildly appropriate for this podcast. So I'm trying to go through the Rolodex of Marshawn stories that I can say and feel comfortable saying. You know, I'm going to have to, Jonathan, I'll get back to you on that. I will reiterate that I love Marshawn, but I think before I tell a full Marshawn story, I need a little more time, just because the last thing I want to do is jam Marshawn up, you know, just because a lot of them are pushing as you can imagine, and I mean this in the best way, but a lot of the stories are pushing the envelope a little bit. Jose, I'm a huge Alice in Chains guy. Didn't know this, but I believe their lead is Jerry Cantrell, their lead singer, is like a diehard Seahawk fan. Again, really a sad story here. This is twice now I'm going to tell you guys I've been big leagued. I have sent maybe, and I'm not just saying this, I've sent maybe six DMs in my life. Like, I'm not super active. I'll respond here and there, but I'm not like a super DM guy. I know some athletes, if you know what I'm saying, are like pretty heavy in the DMs. I sent Jerry Cantrell, I believe his name is, a DM as soon as I found, this is probably 4 months ago, like, yo, what's up, dude? The MTV album, that shit goes hard as fuck, man. I love Alice in Chains. I'm not sure he saw it. So it's a tough situation for me, man. I mean, I still love Alice in Chains, but that's it. You know, that's kind of the vibe for me. That could definitely be in there though. I know they're from Seattle. I see that Wild Boar. I know AIC is from Seattle. That's pretty much all I got. We're coming up on 43 minutes. If anyone's got any last questions, send it in now. If not, we're going to shut this thing down. Next time you see this pod, we're going to have some nice artwork in the background, be a little funky, and we're going to be on here interviewing somebody. That's probably what I'll say. Want to thank you to everybody that tuned in. Again, I know I made some jokes earlier. I want to thank KJ kind of building this thing up. I'm looking forward to kind of keeping it Seattle-centric. I do wish KJ all the best. Even though it's with the Niners, I'm excited. And if there's a guy who's going to, there it is. That's exactly how we feel about it. Mike's on it. If there's a guy that's going to really climb the ranks and get the respect of players and be able to teach and coach and lead, it's KJ Wright. So again, tip my cap to KJ G, what they've done here. Good luck, San Fran. I hope you guys do well every game except for two, because we're winning the division next year. Go Hawks, baby. See y'all soon.